Welcome to the podcast Design Your Success, the podcast that bridges the gap between human design and business. Every episode shares the inspiring story of a business owner who is real, raw, and honest. Hey, you guys, welcome to another episode of the Design Your Success podcast, the podcast where business and human design meet. My name is Nicolina Huizinga. I'm your host. And today I have a wonderful guest, and her name is Elizabeth Griffioen. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Nicolina.
Yes, it's so wonderful
nice to
have you here because you're my video teacher. And we always joke about that in Dutch, that you're my teacher, but you are. So please introduce yourself to our listeners.
Okay, thank you, Nicoline, for inviting me as a guest here. I am Elizabeth. I am from a top of mind video marketing. And what I do is I teach entrepreneurs to use videos for their marketing.
Yeah.
Well, to make them, but especially to make a strategy to reach their potential customers and clients.
Yes. What I love about your approach is that you always emphasize that your own smartphone is enough to provide you with a stage. That's like your motto. And I absolutely love that because it is that simple, that we only need our smartphone to record a video, and you teach people how to make that easy. And I remember my very first video that I made during one of your challenges, and I think it's now, I don't know, 8-9 years ago, something like that. And I remember that first video, I looked like a deer in the headlights. Oh my goodness, I'm recording a video now.
It's so strange. Videos seem such a big deal when it's just so close by, and it's really the purpose of video is to make contact with people more than anything else. And yet we're all like, oh, what's happening and who's going to say something? So there's something in our heads that's sending an alarm signal that shouldn't be there, really.
Yeah, I know. And you, with your programs, you're so good at making people comfortable in front of the camera. And I was in one of your masterminds. And I remember at the evaluation stage, I said, you can either go visit a psychotherapist or do a video mastermind.
It does help you make peace with yourself, with where you look, with where you are on camera.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
At first we're all like, oh, my hair, and I look strange, and my nose is bigger than I thought, and all this stuff. But somewhere in your third or fourth video, you're like, okay, well, it's not going to get better than this, so let's let's post it. Yes.
Yeah. This is it. This is it. This is the vessel that I'm dealing with. So. Let's make the most of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember my very, very first video that I was watching what I had recorded, and I was like in shock. Like, do I sound like this? Do I actually sound like this? Do I look like this when I talk? What happens to my mouth? I was absolutely shocked. But like you said, you know, with video number four, I was like, okay, yeah, this is it. It doesn't get any better. This
I will
is it.
Not get any prettier than I am now. Not getting any younger.
Exactly.
So let's have it. Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that, I think that's very liberating.
It is. It is. So you learn to accept who you are and to make use of that. And I think that's the most liberating element of it. So you do that with video. I do that with human design.
Mm-hmm.
That we really help people to get to know themselves and to embrace themselves the way they are and use that to their advantage.
Yes, and be open and honest and approachable.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you haven't always been an entrepreneur. So how did you become an entrepreneur?
I didn't want to be an entrepreneur. I grew up with big bias against entrepreneurs, about thinking they were flashy people in big cars and stuff like that. But I used to work for television. And then it's really normal to be a freelancer. So I was self-employed about 5 years before I became an entrepreneur, because I was a freelancer. I worked for television. When I didn't have work, I'd be on the couch at home waiting for the phone to ring, and that would always happen. So I didn't need to do any marketing or take any initiatives. I just came along and directed TV shows. But then I had a baby, and well, that's no surprise, of course. That's you know in advance that's going to happen. But I couldn't do a lot of that work anymore. I couldn't travel to Peru to record a TV show because I had to be at home to pick up the baby from daycare, yeah, or stay home. And I was looking for a way to do the work that I can do, the work I know most of, and I'll decide for myself where to work, when to work, and with whom I would work. So that's when I realized, I have to become visible. People have to know who I am. I have to be sort of confident about my work. And I have to take initiative to let people know they could work with me.
Yeah.
So that's when I became an entrepreneur.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's a little over 10 years ago.
Oh, wow. And how did that go for you? Because when you are used to being behind the camera, what is it like to be in front of the camera all of a sudden?
As a director, I think most people who work in TV, they don't like to be they don't want to be in front of the camera, except for the people who are the presenters. So there's like two kinds of people in television. There's many more behind the camera than in front of the camera. And I used to love it to let other people shine and tell their stories and get the pictures that fitted with the story. And then I tried to not make a video at first, because I was writing blog posts and everything, and I was doing Twitter. And then I think I realized I am, being a single mother, I have to make some money. Mm. There was like bills to pay, mortgage to pay. And then I thought, okay, this is not going fast enough. I have to do something else to get more people to know me. And I am not, you are really great at networking and events and stuff like that. But I didn't want to leave my kid too often. And it's also, I am, or maybe I used to be sort of shy. Mm. So it took everything out of me to visit one of those networking places. And I think that's when I decided, well, maybe I should tell some stuff about video making in a video.
Okay.
So that's the moment I thought, okay, where can I do this? And I just took a painting of the wall. I set up, I didn't even have actual equipment. But I turned off every light in the room, and I did have a camera and a microphone, and I started telling stuff I knew about video making that I thought would be helpful to other people.
Mm.
And I was like, did like a deer, the same deer. And I didn't breathe for 10 minutes, I think. But, and then my first video was something that people could, they'd send me their mail for people to get people on my email list.
Mm-hmm.
And I had made this video with 16 video tips.
Oh, wow.
10 minutes.
Okay.
Yes, that was overkill.
But you didn't know at the time.
No, now I say to people, just give one tip per video, nothing more. But I had it was hilarious. Oh, yes, I didn't breathe throughout the whole thing. So my voice was like, and, but that was the second, because the first video you throw away. Nobody has to see that. Yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I love that. It's so relatable. It's so relatable, because I just recently I watched a video that I made for one of my clients at the time. And they had asked me, because one of the things that I did at the time was proposal writing. So I because that was my background, I did a lot of proposal writing, and they asked me to do a training on proposal writing, but they wanted it on video. So they asked me, do you do this on video? I said, yeah, sure, no worries. No clue, no clue, but I'm going to wing it, I'm sure. So they hired a professional filmmaker, and there were lights and a green screen and a microphone and all of that. And I'm presenting as if I'm on Wheel of Fortune. I'm like, and here is the key element for proposal writing. And here you have. It's hilarious. And I was so uncomfortable, and it shows, it really shows. But, you know, I did it anyway. And that's what you said, is just, you just have to start. You just have to do it. And that's what you did.
And yeah, of course, we learn by doing.
Yeah, and of course you make mistakes with giving 16 tips for video.
Yeah, but also in presenting, because our examples are like what we grew up with our TV shows.
Yeah.
So it's natural that we sort of think, oh, there's a camera.
Yeah.
And
smile.
Yeah. It's completely different now, because television has become sort of, has gone to the margin, whereas YouTube and social media have become so much more important.
Absolutely.
And then it's grown, well, people act sort of normal in front of the camera, even though you can never be 100% the same as you are without the camera.
No.
So it's become so much, it's become accessible for everyone. And I really love that about the video right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it that you can just select on YouTube, okay, who do I want to watch? Yeah. And there is so much out there. Of course, there's a risk there, especially when I look at my human design, I'm easily overwhelmed. So I don't need, and I shouldn't be going on YouTube to consume. No. I just should be there as a creator and then leave.
Yes, and it's anyone can make a channel and post some videos. And the thing is, TV needed, like, you need millions of people watching, but on YouTube one can be enough.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I think that's the reassuring bit about YouTube, that you don't run the risk of being cancelled, whereas TV shows always run the risk of being cancelled.
Yes,
especially these days when the number of viewers is like crucial.
Yeah.
Even after episode one or two, it's like, oh, not enough. You're done.
Yes. And then it's like reputation damage and everything.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's not the case with YouTube. So that's wonderful. So thinking about your entire journey, so over the past 10 years, what would you say is like have been pivotal moments for you?
I think for me, is there something as a most pivotal? That's weird. One moment I really remember very well was when I was already it looked good. You know, I had work and I could take care of my child. He was he was a little, he was like 4 or 5, I think. Mm-hmm. And I was making videos. I had a very small online course as well. So I was teaching a little bit, but mostly I went to people to record videos and I edited them. And I thought, okay, well, this is, my dream has come true.
Yeah.
I'm done. I'm a single mother with their own, I'm an entrepreneur, a mom, whatever.
Yeah.
It's going well. And I thought, okay, I'm going to be happy. And I just wasn't. Because one afternoon I had finished recording videos with someone somewhere in The Hague, because I remember the street very well. And I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm going home quickly and got to pick up the kid and everything. And I was like, oh,
I'm exhausted.
Can't stand it. And that was because I said yes to everyone and everything. So I spent the day recording videos with someone I didn't agree with, And I didn't have any say in whatever happened, and I don't like that. Mm-hmm. So that's where I realized I have to change something, because I just don't want to have the feeling that I cannot say no to people.
Yeah.
And that is when I made a decision to go. I love that. That's the go big or go home moment.
Yeah.
Where I thought, okay, I have to make sure that not enough, oh, more, 10 times more than enough people know who I am and what I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to become extremely visible.
Yeah. And that starts with the decision, right?
Yes.
Starts with the decision. So what did you do?
I started making a lot more videos.
Okay.
I started posting them on LinkedIn, on Facebook, not even so much on YouTube then, because I was a bit afraid of YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought that if you post a video there, it can just go viral. That's a big myth.
We don't want that.
No. What if everybody is coming here to... No, that was nonsense. But I thought I was a bit afraid of it. So that's when I started making... Well, series, like 5 videos at first, and then I thought, oh, I can do 10. So I did 10 videos, and then I did a challenge with my 10 videos, and then all of a sudden it didn't explode, but it grew enormously fast.
Yeah.
And that's where I thought, okay, that I think the moment where I think, okay, this video is good enough to post, might not be perfect. There's no such a thing as perfect, you know that.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot more videos.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that. So simple.
More just of what works.
Yeah, but so you posted a lot more videos.
Yeah.
And I mean, when people don't know you, they need to look you up, because the videos that you make always give valuable insight, a tip, an advice. And it's always practical. You can always use it. It's like, oh, it's always a great reminder. Even if you've heard the same tip like 10 times before, it's always a great reminder. So your content is just great. So I think you really understood and understand well what your audience needs.
It didn't start out like that. I have to, because the first like 10 videos I did when I started doing weekly videos were about me.
Mm.
We're like, oh, I'm here, because I used to go to give to record videos or do a training or something, and then I thought I'm going to show where video is taking me. So, and then at the end I said something useful, but that worked. It did work on LinkedIn. It did work on Facebook, because people who already knew me were like, oh, where's she going now?
Yeah.
It just tanked on YouTube. I had like 25,000 views on LinkedIn and then 12 on YouTube.
Mm.
And that was another moment where I thought, okay, how long can I keep this up?
Yeah.
Because there's not something interesting happening in my life every week.
Yeah.
And I was getting tired. And then I sort of adapted the YouTube thought of how can you make videos that people actually want to see.
Mm. Yeah, so yes. That's where you pivoted to meet the YouTube viewers.
Yes, and it was sort of a painful process at first, because I was like, oh, but I have things to say. I see a lot of people, and I had the same. If you start making videos, you're sort of like, I'm telling what I think people should know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not the way to do it.
No.
And that's sort of painful.
It is. Yeah. The ego is like, ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
It's like in front of the camera, let me tell you, it's like you're like, it's lifting you up, but where the attitude is, how can I serve right now?
Yeah. I love that. I love that. I think that is such a great insight that on YouTube, because what we see and the prejudice that we have about YouTube creators, that many of them make it about them, like, look at my life, look at my, you know, come to my crib, Look at my car, look at my house, look at my whatever. So they make it about them, and subconsciously we're taking that on. While especially when we're entrepreneurs, it's all about the message that we have to bring. So we need to make ourselves the servant to the message. But that's hard. That's hard.
Also, because it's very tempting to believe if people, people like me. And it's easy to be swept up in that. People see me. Oh, they love me. So I think that it happens now. And then I used to be very, it made me really happy to get lots of compliments and comments and likes and everything. Until I realized it didn't sell any, being liked doesn't always sell any products. So, but it's very, I think it everybody gets swept away in that at one time or another.
Well, I can totally relate to that. And especially when I look at my human design, I have, when you look at the body graph, I have five open centers out of nine, five open centers. So I'm very sensitive to other people's energy. So when they give me a compliment, I'm like, oh, this is so nice. So for me, it's really hard to stick to my own guns and to just follow my own route. So I, in a way, I need the, or at least I need it, past tense.
Because now you know. You can deal with it. Yes.
Now I'm aware of it. And I like, okay, I don't need it. I don't need it. All I need is the validation that I'm on the right track. So what I need is the validation to make sure that I do things that really light me up, things that provide me with fun, that provide me with joy. That's my biggest goal now. But before, it was like, I loved it when people said, oh, I always love your videos. And I was like, yes.
It feels good. It does. It does feel good.
It does. It does, but it's an ego thing. It's an ego thing. So I love what you said about, you know, being the servant to the message.
So, it's also a way to keep safe, I think, because people usually worry about getting criticism. Whereas I think, well, if I do not come empty-handed, it's like going to a party. We're not going empty-handed, and then if you're bringing something, then people are less likely to criticize.
Yeah, so. True. Very smart. Very smart.
I think it's also been my way of keeping it safe.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness. It's so true. So, what would you say is the biggest mistake that people make when working with video, apart from making it about themselves?
I think the biggest mistake is thinking they can't do any better than I think. Okay.
There are so many mistakes.
What's the biggest that makes this making it really hard? I think the biggest mistake people make when doing video is thinking one video is enough for two or three. And then they're like, oh, well, I've done three videos. Over.
I'm done.
Whereas if to make it work, you have to make a commitment, not daily, not weekly, but every 2 weeks or every month, there should be a new video really to make it really work. And then, if you have like a 100, you can kick back a bit. But there has to be some kind of channel, place where people can watch more videos.
That makes total sense. Makes total sense. So, I mean, a channel with only 5 or 6 videos doesn't make any sense.
No, that's not a place where people can go to get information. It's just too little. So people think, oh, I've done a few videos, so I've made the effort.
Yeah.
But the effort isn't always enough.
No, definitely not. So when we look at the concept, I'm asking everyone this question, because I think it's so interesting, and especially in the online world, and you and I operate a lot in the online world, there is a definition of success. I mean, so many people talk about, you know, having a six-figure business, running a team, all of that.
Being a star.
What would be your definition of success?
My definition of success has always been that I want to not worry about money and still be my own boss. Be my own boss. No, I want to be able to take care of my kids and do my work and not worry about money. That has been, for a long time, that has been my definition of success.
Yeah, but it's a very valid, it's a valid definition, right?
Yes, yes. And but when the, it takes a lot of time. Well, you know that if you, like the school and stuff, like, oh, there's a special afternoon, can some parents come? You know, there's always stuff like that.
Yeah.
And still now, sometimes he's home from school early and I have to go pick him up. Like, but I want to have the freedom to do that and still enjoy my work.
Yeah.
Because enjoying is also part of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. I think especially, well, you and I are both generators in human design. And I know that for generators, success is equals satisfaction. So we need to feel the satisfaction of the things that we do. The success, success as in, you know, real success, that's for projectors. They need to look at success. For us as generators and manifesting generators as well, we need to look for the satisfaction. And then success will come as a byproduct of that. Yeah. And same with money, same with status or recognition and all of that, that comes with the satisfaction that we get from what we do. So as generators, I think it's really important that we chase that and that we check in with ourselves every now and again, like, okay, where's my energy? Do I still feel it? Does it light me up? Does it give me joy? Do I really love doing this? So I love the example that you gave of the client that you worked with in The Hague, where you felt like, I don't want to do this anymore. Whereas what you do now, and you are running the courses, the challenges, the mastermind, and you absolutely love what you do. And that's, I think that that is just a great definition of success. And it's, it equals mine as well, because that is my definition that I, you know, can bring and contribute to other people's lives, that I can light the light in others and have a good life myself. And that's just wonderful to have that. So, well, we were talking about human design. So how much do you know about human design? How much do you, and if you know, do you use it?
Well, one thing about human design, it does need like a date of birth and a time.
Yes.
And my mother doesn't actually remember what time I was born exactly.
Okay.
She said, oh, it's around 3:30. And then I was born in the US, in the United States, in the summer. And it's really hard to figure out if they had daylight savings time in that year. So it's everything connected to the exact, where you have to give your exact time and date of birth. Yeah. I'm like, oh, it's not for me. Sad. But I did do the body graph thing because I know you and I know you work with that, and I respect you. So I think that's something worth to looking into.
Yeah.
So I did the test. So I found I'm a generator with an emotional authority.
Okay, great.
Yes. Yeah. And I read some stuff about that. But I haven't like used it, but I did find that very interesting, that the test you referred me to.
Know, the funny thing is that the best strategy for a generator is waiting to respond. That's our best strategy. And what I have heard from you up to now is that you have been responding all the time because you responded to the fact that you had a baby and you didn't want to travel anymore. You responded by starting your own business. You responded by, oh, blogging is not enough. I need to make some videos. You have been responding all the time. So subconsciously, you have been living your design like all along.
And I've been waiting to, I'm great one for putting off decisions to sleep on it as well.
Yeah, so that's great. That's just great. When you do that like subconsciously, and that's what I always tell people when we work with human design, I always tell them, you know, I'm not going to say anything that you haven't heard or haven't experienced before. If all this is a guideline and a confirmation of what you already know about you and what you have already done and what you knew when you were a child. So it's nothing new. It's just a confirmation, and it gives you a guideline of, okay, this is how you're wired and this is how you operate best.
Yeah.
But it can be really complicated to dive into, you know, all the elements of human design. But knowing this and then seeing how this already played out in your life, I'm just incredibly amused by the fact that you have been responding all the time.
But does that mean that I'm responding, but I'm also taking initiatives. Yeah, and how does that fit into
it? But the initiative you take is in response.
Yeah.
That's what you do.
Yeah.
Because if you would initiate something out of the blue, like, oh, I would love to do this or that, that's when it stops working.
Yeah, and but I don't like doing that.
Yeah, but what you have done so far is all in response. And, yeah, and especially when we look now, because you have been serving the Dutch market for a very long time, and now you're doing the whole thing internationally, basically the same thing, but internationally in English.
Yes.
And that was in response as well, because you got the question from people, oh, yeah, can you do it in English?
Yes.
And people telling you like, oh, but you should do it in English. And that's when you respond.
That's when I thought, why not?
Yeah. Exactly. But yes, that's how that mechanism works. And when you can start to see that, it will definitely make a difference when you initiate something that is not out of response versus when it is out of response. Mm-hmm. I know the difference. I've done a lot of things that were not in response and they fell flat. It didn't work. It just didn't work. So I launched programs, I launched coaching stuff, and it just didn't work because I was thinking like, oh, this is what I want to be doing. But it was not what anyone else wanted or what my audience said, like, oh, this is, can you do a course on this or that? Mm-hmm. And that's I remember very, I'm using you as an example again because it's so wonderful. You had this guy who was really good on LinkedIn on YouTube.
Yes.
And he was absolutely great at YouTube, and you watched him, and then you asked him like, oh, could you do a guest workshop in one of my programs? And then people were like, oh, this is so good, we need more. And then you were doing the whole thing on YouTube and you were sharing your experience. So it was all in response. So without even knowing, you're living your design.
That's good to know.
That's definitely good to know. Yeah.
So awesome. My question about this to you is about open centers.
Yes.
Do they stay open or do you close them? Or
no, they stay open.
This is like a fact of life.
This is how you're born and it won't change. And it's a great question because many people have that. And there seems to be some misunderstanding about, oh, you have the open center, and when you learn more about it, it closes. But it's not. It's not.
It feels like a vulnerability or something.
It is. It is. And it's a strength. Because for me, for instance, I have an open throat center, which means that I find it hard to communicate first. So speaking up first in a group, not so much. I can do it, but it takes me a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. And I know this about me, but what it does as well, so the advantage of having an open throat, is that I can communicate with many people. with many levels of people, with many different people, because I can adjust, I can respond to their way of communicating. And that's a great advantage. So I can be like a chameleon and I can just, you know, be agile with them. Like, oh, okay, you want to go this way? You want to go that way? That's just great. So that's a great talent. And of course, it can be a handicap when I'm in a group and people tell me, oh, can you introduce you first? And I'm like, I don't want to go first. So yeah, having open centers can be a vulnerability, and you can turn it into a strength as well. So
for me, you're conscious of it.
Yeah, that's the thing. When you're aware of it, then you know how to navigate it. So for me, when I go on YouTube, I have an open head and an open Ashna center. I have a lot of open centers, but these two are the most important ones. When I go on YouTube, so the head center is all about ideas, inspiration. The Ashna is all about conceptualization. So how to translate the ideas into action. When I go on YouTube, I get overwhelmed with ideas and inspiration and ways to execute all the ideas. So what I really need to be aware of, first of all, limit the time that I have on YouTube and make sure that I'm there as a creator and not as a consumer. And of course, the great thing about having an open head and an open Ashna is that I'm literally open-minded. So I'm willing to try anything. I'm open to any new way. So it brings a lot of innovation as well. But it can be overwhelming as well. So yeah, that's the whole thing with the open centers. So back to you before we wrap up this conversation. I would love to hear your best advice that you can give our listener, and it would be helpful to have the top three, because I know you have a lot of great advice.
I've written down three because you told me you were going to ask me this. So the first of three is make sure you have a good product that you feel confident about selling. Mm. So you're not like, oh, you could do this or could do that. Feel confident about what you're selling.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's sort of easily done, because anyone can make a good product about the thing you're an expert at.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the second one is what we talked about, is to separate like the personal thing from the business. Mm. And so you are one person, you have a private, you have the person you are is part of your business if you're a solo entrepreneur, but also if for bigger companies. But your marketing should not be about you. Yeah. And it's what, like we said, it's really tempting to make it about you, but make it about your client or your future client first. That has changed so much for me.
I can imagine.
And it was such a painful transition.
Oh God! Yeah, I can
and
imagine.
Now the funny thing is, I've made it about my future clients, but I have a lot of fun creating the videos. Mm. And there's still a lot of me in, so I didn't lose anything by changing that.
Yeah, but it's a very different mindset, right? It's a very different mindset, and it's, well, what you said about the ego, that it's really about serving the client, serving the message, and not serving yourself.
Yeah,
yeah, I love that.
Yeah,
great.
And then the third advice is, like I said before, don't hold back. And people can, you are an expert at this as well. Don't hold back on visibility.
Yeah.
If you feel like you're too visible, that's good.
Yeah.
That's what I learned as well. Be annoyingly visible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you feel like that, you're still not.
Yeah, it's so funny that you said this, because it's so true. It's so true. Earlier today, I had a session with my accountability team, And we spoke, you know, a little bit chit chat before we started the session. And one of the ladies said, oh, you know, I went to Amsterdam last week and I walked past the Ziggo Dome, a very huge concert hall in the Netherlands. And she said, yeah, there was a concert by the Arctic Monkeys. I said, oh yeah, the Arctic Monkeys. And she said, I don't know them. I didn't know them. And I looked them up and I watched them on Spotify and I saw they had 1.9 billion downloads. And she said, and I don't know them. Who are these guys? And I'm like, okay. So the Arctic Monkeys on their part are like, yeah. Oh, we've got 1.9 billion downloads. Yeah. Wait, everyone knows us.
Not by a long shot, no.
So your advice about don't hold back on visibility and be annoyingly visible, then still you won't have reached everyone. So just keep going. And I think that's the best advice that that we can give our listeners. So yeah, wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your story, for sharing the wisdom and these wonderful tips. We're in the show notes. We're going to share your details so people can connect with you and learn how to make amazing videos and find you on YouTube where you share your weekly videos.
Yeah, weekly.
You do it weekly in English.
Well, not on the school vacations, of course.
No, of course not. Of course not. But you do that weekly in Dutch and English. So yes. That's just great. So thank you so much. And we will stay in touch. And
yes.
I'm sure many listeners will find their way to you too.
And thank you for having me as a guest, Nicoline.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Design Your Success podcast. If you would like to be a guest, make sure to go to our website, www.nicolinahuizinga.com.